From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. When you read the stories of Sherlock Holmes, you realize all his unique characteristics, his eccentric nature, his tenacity, his deductive powers, they all seem to be driven by one thing, the fear of being bored. Volumes have been written about why Holmes prefers to be distracted, the trauma of childhood, a broken heart, whatever it is, when he finds a mystery to be solved, no matter how frivolous, he jumps for joy and then jumps in. Tonight on the program, we've teamed up with Plan B Theater Company to present a radio adaptation of one of Sherlock Holmes' more whimsical adventures, one just right for the season. We're live at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center for Sherlock Holmes in the Blue Carpet. Curtain time is right up to you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today on the program, we're live at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City, presenting a radio adaptation of a story from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And now, KUER and Plan B Theater Company present Episode 7 of Radio Hour, Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle.
I had called upon my friend Sherlock Holmes upon the second morning after Christmas, intending to wish him the compliments of the season, but also to be assured of his convalescence. Our last adventure had taken its toll. He was perched upon the sofa in a lavender dressing gown, his hair ruffled, a black clay pipe dangling from his lips. A mound of newspaper lay crumpled upon the floor, and as always of late, the daguerreotype of the woman sat on the end table. I dare say he did not hear me as I came in, so engrossed he was with a very seedy and disreputable black felt hat, the current subject of his lens and forceps. Perhaps I interrupt you.
Watson, no, not at all. I am glad to have a companion with whom I can discuss my results. Fruitcake?
Sorry?
Fruitcake. Would you fancy a slice? Mrs. Hudson baked it. She claims the cinnamon came from Sri Lanka, but I suspect an archipelago of Indonesia. I beg you have a piece. It is enormous and all I have eaten for 2 days.
So I gathered. I believe you're trembling, and you still have your cough, Holmes.
Yes or no? My discipline wanes. I am powerless before confections, as you know. Please decide.
I suppose a small piece.
Thank you. Begone with it. Devour the terrible sweet object.
I sliced for myself a moderately liberal helping, out of charity more than temptation. Knowing of my friend's predisposition to these manias, it was uncommonly comestible. Oh, dear.
Do not taunt. On your plate is addiction in the form of a baked good.
So the hat, what of it?
Ah, yes, extraordinary, don't you think? You know Peterson, the commissionaire.
This is his hat?
No, he found it. Its owner is unknown, and I beg that you look upon it, Watson, not as a battered billycock, but as an intellectual problem. It arrived upon Christmas morning with a good fat goose, which is, I have no doubt, roasting at this moment in front of Peterson's fire.
Indeed.
The facts are these. One, the curtain rises, so to speak, 4 o'clock Christmas morning. Peterson was returning from a jollification. Two, winding his way down Tottenham Court Road, he saw before him in the buttery gaslight a tallish man walking with a slight stagger, a white goose slung over his shoulder. Three, as he reached the corner of Goodge Street, a row broke out between this stranger and a knot of roughs.
That's a fine-looking fowl, mister. Only fair to share a fowl like that.
Was that a direct quotation?
I am priming your imagination. Hush. Four, one of the roughs knocked off the man's hat. The man drew up his stick to defend his person and, stropping it through the air, smashed the window beside him. Five, Peterson jogged forward to protect the stranger from his assailants, but the man, shocked at having broken the window and seeing an official rushing toward him, dropped his goose, took to his heels, and vanished along with the roughs amid the labyrinth of streets. Last, Peterson was left in possession of the field of battle and, of course, the spoils of victory in the shape of this battered hat and a most unimpeachable Christmas goose. Curtain falls.
Bravo!
So, your task is to restore the hat to its owner.
My dear fellow, there lies the problem. It is true that for Mrs. H. Baker, my darling wife, was printed upon a small card which was tied to the bird's leg. It is also true that the initials H.B. are legible upon the lining of this hat. But, as there are some thousands of Bakers and some dozens of H. Bakers in this city of ours, it is not easy to restore lost property to any one of them.
What then did Peterson do?
Are you listening, Watson? He brought round both hat and goose to me. The goose we retained until this morning when there were signs that it should be eaten without unnecessary delay. The finder has carried it off, therefore, to fulfill the ultimate destiny of a goose, while I continue to retain the hat of the unknown gentleman who lost his Christmas dinner.
Did he not advertise?
No.
Then what clue could you have as to his identity?
Only as much as we can deduce.
From his hat?
Precisely.
Are you having a go at me? What can you gather from this old battered felt?
Here is my lens. You know my methods. What can you gather yourself as to the individuality of this man who has worn this article?
What can I gather?
Our capacities are equal, Watson. The difference between us, I tell you, lies in the exercise of our perspicacity. You prefer to pummel the bag while I jab, cross, hook, jab, cross.
I do not require a display of your pugilism, Holmes, physical or mental.
Prove it to yourself, Watson. We are equal. Our instruments are identically sensitive.
Alone. I have heard enough about our instruments.
What can you gather from the hat? Try.
Hand it over.
Good man.
I took the battered object in my hands and turned it over rather ruefully. It was an ordinary black hat of the usual round shape. Hard. Much the worse for wear. I can see nothing. I see an old hat.
On the contrary, Watson, you can see everything. You fail, however, to reason from what you see. You are too timid in drawing your inferences. You see a left hook.
Then pray tell me what it is that you can infer from this lowly headpiece. He picked it up and gazed at it in his peculiar introspective fashion.
The man was highly intellectual, fairly well-to-do within the last 3 years. He had foresight, but less now than formerly, pointing to a moral retrogression, which, when taken with the declines of his fortune, seems to indicate some evil influence, probably drink, a stout beer. This may also account for the obvious fact that his wife has ceased to love him.
My dear Holmes.
He has, however, retained some degree of self-respect. He is a man who leads a sedentary life, goes out little, is out of training entirely, is middle-aged, has grizzled hair, which he has had cut within the last few days, and which he anoints with lime cream. Also, it is extremely improbable that he has gas heating in his house.
You are certainly joking, Holmes. Stop this Christmas prank.
Is it possible that even now, when I give you these results, you are unable to see how they are attained?
I have no doubt that I am very stupid. But I must confess that I am unable to follow you. How did you deduce that this man was intellectual?
It is a question of cubic capacity. A man with so large a brain must have something in it.
That is pseudoscientific speculation.
Time will tell. In the meantime, big hat, big brain. Well, I am confident of his intellect.
The decline of his fortunes, then.
Watson, this hat is 3 years old. These flat brims curled at the edge came into vogue then.
Oh, hum. Have you been studying the Marshall Ward catalogs?
It is a hat of the very best quality. It did not come from Marshall Ward. I would wager Barker's Dairy and Tom's on Kensington High Street.
Pshaw!
Look at the band of ribbed silk. That is either Barker's or Ponting's. And if this man could afford to buy so expensive a hat 3 years ago and has had no hat since, then he has assuredly gone down in the world.
Well, what about the foresight, the moral retrogression?
Here is the foresight, the hat securer. It's never sold with hats. If this man ordered one, it is a sign of a certain amount of foresight. But since we see that he has since broken this elastic and has not troubled to replace it, it is obvious that he has less foresight now than formerly. On the other hand, he has endeavored to conceal some of these stains upon the felt by daubing them with ink, a sign that he has not entirely lost his self-respect.
Your reasoning is plausible. No doubt your lens detected the hair, the cream, the perspiration. but the man's wife...
The hat has not been brushed for weeks, Watson. When Mary allows you to jaunt about with a week's accumulation of dust, I shall fear that you also have lost your wife's affection.
Mary is a new woman. She does not concern herself with my dust.
She grooms you publicly.
She never...
You are unconscious of it, I know. But Thursday last at dinner, she spirited a crumb from your mustache as you recounted your Persian plumbing saga.
Nevertheless, this man Baker might be a bachelor.
Nay, he was bringing home the goose as a peace offering to his wife. Remember the card upon the bird's leg. Keep up, man.
All right. But how on earth do you deduce that the gas is not laid on in his house? Tell me that.
One tallow stain, or even two, might come by chance. But when I see no less than five, I think there can be little doubt the individual must be brought into frequent contact with burning tallow. So, drunk at night, perhaps, he never hangs his hat, lights his candles right over it.
Very ingenious, Holmes. But all of this seems to be a waste of vitality since...
The goose, Mr. Holmes!
Peterson, the commissionaire, bowled into the apartment, pink upon his cheeks, the daze of astonishment hanging over him.
The goose, sir!
What of it? Has it returned to life and flapped out the kitchen window?
More miraculous still, sir. See here. See what my wife dug from its innards.
He held out his hand and displayed upon the center of his palm a scintillating blue stone, as large as a robin's egg, and of such purity and radiance that it twinkled like an electric point in the dark hollow of his hand.
By Newton Peterson, this is treasure trove indeed. I suppose you know what you have got.
Sure as I do, sir. A diamond, a precious stone. It bites into glass as though it were putty. Look here.
I believe you. Get away from my window. No need for a demonstration. Give it here, Peterson. Ah, yes, no doubt it is more than a precious stone, Commissioner. It is the precious stone of which we have all read of late.
Do you mean to say that this stone...
Oh, yes, Watson.
The Countess of Morcar's blue carbuncle?
Precisely so.
Is that a diamond?
Sapphire, a variety of corundum. Not to know, seeing I've read the advertisement about it in the Times every day lately. It is absolutely unique. Its value can only be conjectured. The reward of £1,000 is certainly not within a 20th of its market price.
£1,000? Great Lord of mercy!
The commissionaire plumped down into the settee, gaping from one to the other of us like a pigeon deep in thought.
£1,000? That's as much as £100 times 10.
By Pythagoras it is, Peterson. Yes, that is the reward. Though I know the Countess would part with half her fortune if she could recover the gem, it is said her sentiment...
If she could, you twirl it even now in your fingers, Holmes.
And I shall return it upon my honor. But no sooner than I pierce the dark circumstances of its theft. To do otherwise would endanger the Countess.
Oh, stuff it. You just want to impress her.
I want to protect my lady. My duty as an Englishman.
You want a pretext for a meeting.
I beg your pardon.
You do not need the money. Send the stone back with Peterson.
No. The misdeeds connected to the gem must be unearthed.
Holmes, avail yourself of the holiday. You are still weak with influenza.
Nonsense. I am brimming with energy.
You are brimming with fruitcake. You are also lovesick.
Lovesick? Ha!
Do not deny it. The great Sherlock Holmes is not immune to the softer passions. Oh, you certainly had me convinced once. But ever since that business with the hellhound, you have been discomfited.
I have been overrun with microbes. My discomfiture is utterly unconnected to the woman.
I may have missed the tallow stains on Mr. Baker's hat, but the open display of that woman's photograph for weeks now has not gone unnoticed.
What woman?
Confess.
May we return to the case?
Is that her?
Do not touch that!
I have your scent, my friend.
The woman bears nothing whatsoever on the problem.
The Countess of Morcar is a connected and sociable patron of the theater. I also read the Times. And you hope that she will introduce you to parties who may have information regarding the woman's whereabouts. What do you say to that deduction?
I say it teeters upon assumption.
Give the gem to Peterson. Peterson, you return it. Our friend is lonely at Christmas. I diagnose him with grit in his sensitive instrument.
His what?
You cannot even pronounce her name, Holmes. You cannot say Irene Adler.
Ah! May we please return to the matter?
What in the devil's hooves was that?
That was a Chinese firecracker, ignited with my pipe, tossed under the sofa when your attentions were abstracted, and the sound of its fuse covered by my cough. Let it be a lesson to you both. Moving on!
Oh.
Now, according to the Times, the gem was lost at the Hotel Claridge on the 22nd of December. A plumber by the name of John Horner was accused of having nipped it from the lady's jewel case. The evidence against Horner was so strong the case was referred to the High Court. But the stone was not found either upon his person or in his rooms. Now, I shall not permit the same villain a second opportunity to sack the Countess. Therefore, whatever my motives, John, the question for us to solve, supposing I can rely on you, is the sequence of events leading from a rifle jewel case to the gizzard of a goose in Tottenham Court Road. Peterson, fetch a pencil and a slip of paper.
Sir?
We will advertise in the evening papers for Mr. H. Baker. Fetch.
Yes, sir.
Write this.
Holmes.
Found at the corner of Goodge Street, Goose and Black Hat. Mr. H. Baker can have the same by applying at 6:30 this evening at 221B Baker Street. That clear and concise?
I think so, sir.
But will he see it?
He is sure to keep an eye on the paper, since to a poor man the loss was a heavy one. He was so clearly scared by his mischance in breaking the window and by Peterson that he thought of nothing but flight. But since then he must have bitterly regretted the impulse which caused him to bumble his bird. Then again, the introduction of this name will cause him to see it, for anyone who knows the H. Baker minus one goose will direct his attention to it. Run to the advertisers, Peterson. Have this put in the papers. To the papers.
To which, sir?
The Globe, the Star, the Pall Mall, St. James, the Evening News, the Standard, the Echo, any others that will accept English coin. Be gone.
Very well, sir, straight away. Only, wait, what did we decide to do with the stone in the meantime, sir?
I shall keep it safe.
But do we arouse the Countess to the situation?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, because the identity of the crook is uncertain. It could be someone close to the Countess.
You think that this man Horner is innocent?
I cannot tell. Do not send word as of yet, Peterson. Now make haste.
I will, sir. By which I mean I won't. Send word. I mean, I will make haste.
I understood. You may flee.
Right. Good morning, then.
No. Hold, Peterson.
Holding.
On your way back, you must buy a goose. We must have a replacement for this gentleman in place of the one your family is now devouring. Watson, may I lend the two bob from your left coat pocket to Peterson?
My left coat pocket?
Here you are, Peterson. Thank you, Watson. What are your instructions?
To the papers. New goose. Nary a word to the Countess.
Yes. Now run.
Right, Doctor.
As the commissionaire fled, Holmes took up the stone and held it against the light.
It is a bonny thing. Just look how it glints and sparkles.
Very impressive, yes.
Gems such as these are the devil's pet baits. Every facet of it reflects a bloody deed. There have been 2 murders, an acid throwing, a suicide, and 11 robberies brought about for the sake of these 150 grams of aluminum oxide.
Holmes, listen to me. I was quite serious before.
As was I. Now, do you imagine that Baker had anything to do with the matter?
Holmes.
I think it is more likely Baker had no idea the bird which he carried was worth more than solid gold. You're listening to Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle, presented by Plan B Theater Company, live at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West. On KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We now continue with our holiday radio play, Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle.
I carried on my professional round that day, so distracted I lost count of an old woman's pulse. I cursed Holmes under my breath, began again. All day I dwelled on 221B and the single-minded savant pacing within. At 6:30, I hurried back along Baker Street, when, on the curb, I beheld a giant of a man, wearing a Scotch bonnet and a ragged black frock coat buttoned up to his chin. He was waiting in the bright rainbow semicircle thrown by the fanlight. Just about to greet the fellow, the door flew open. Holmes motioned me and the large man up the steps and into his study.
Mr. H. Baker, I believe,
said Holmes with an air of easy geniality.
Is it Howard, Herbert, or Henry? I've narrowed it down.
Henry, sir, after the Lancaster Kings. My mother had high hopes for me.
Indeed. Pray take this chair by the fire, Mr. Baker. Ah. It is a cold night, and I observe your circulation is more adapted for summer than for winter. Watson, you've come at the right time. Is that your hat, Mr. Baker?
Yes, that is undoubtedly and tragically my hat. Originally, it was a Ponting's. Now it is rather wanting.
He was a bell tower of a man, with rounded shoulders, a massive block head, and a broad, intelligent face sloping down to a pointed beard of grizzled brown.
We have retained these things for some day, Mr. Baker, because we expected to see an advertisement from you giving your address. I am a loss to know why you did not advertise.
Shillings have not been so flush with me as they once were. I had no doubt that the roughs who assaulted me had toted off both hat and bird. I did not care to throw coins after the bills which I'd seen flutter into oblivion.
Very naturally. By the way, about the bird, we were compelled to eat it.
To eat it?
Yes. Would have been no use to anyone had we not done so. But I presume this other goose upon the sideboard, which is about the same weight, perfectly fresh, will answer your purpose equally well?
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Many thanks.
Of course, we still have the feathers, legs, intestines, and so on of your own bird, if you wish.
They may be useful to me as relics of my adventure, but beyond that I can hardly see how the disjecta membra of my late acquaintance would be of use to me.
Indeed.
Sherlock Holmes glanced across at me with a sly shrug at the man's Latin learning, and no doubt at the fact of Henry Baker's indifference about the bird's disjecta.
Here is your hat, then, and there your bird, Mr. Baker. Would it bore you to tell me where you got the other one from? I am somewhat of a fowl fancier, you see, and I have seldom seen a better grown goose.
Certainly, sir. The fancy fowl came from the Alpha Inn near the museum. This year, our good host Windigate instituted a goose club, by which a few pence every week we each received an ornithological Christmas. My pence were duly paid, and the rest is familiar. I am much indebted to you, sir, for a Scotch bonnet is fitted neither to my years nor my gravity. Yes. It's Ponting's for me.
With a comical pomposity of manner, he bowed solemnly to us, switched the bonnet for the billycock, and strode off upon his way.
So much for Henry Baker. It is quite certain he knows nothing whatever about the theft. Are you hungry, Watson?
Not particularly.
Then I suggest...
Unless Mrs. Hudson's fruitcake...
Later, and I told you so. We ought to turn our dinner into a supper and follow up this clue while it is still red hot.
We ought to send Peterson... Holmes, you look a fever.
Peterson can scarcely multiply.
You are not at your top form.
In my worst form, I would chase this clue. Come, Watson.
It was a bitter night, so we drew on our ulsters and wrapped cravats about our throats. Outside, the stars shone coldly in a cloudless sky, and the breath of passers-by blew out into smoke like so many pistol shots. My friend's feet, it seemed, had grown invisible wings despite his ailing lungs. I struggled to stay apace as my shoes rang out crisply and loudly down Oxford Street. Within 20 minutes, we were in Bloomsbury at the Alpha, a public house possessed of a distinctly plebeian elegance.
All right, boys.
Leading our tour, as always, Holmes thrust open the door, startling the half-conscious tippler at a nearby table.
You're not Daisy.
Fascinating. Two glasses, barkeep, frothy and frigid. Your beer should be excellent if it is as good as your geese.
My geese?
The reed-thin proprietor was as bewildered as he was drunk. His eyes bugged into uncertainty as he scratched and twirled at a tussock of white hair sprouting from his Adam's apple. Holmes plowed on.
Yes, I was speaking only a half an hour ago to Mr. Henry Baker, who was a member of your illustrious goose club.
That's so. You know I'd like Henry, then.
Henry!
Quiet.
Yes, we are old pals. Knew him before the odd luck. Mm. So again, the old boy was bragging about your geese.
Ducks.
Well, you Ducks. See, them's Ducks. Not our Ducks. Geese, sir.
Duck geese, run, Henry!
I said quiet! Oh. So, them's not our geese, sir. Mm. Not official-like.
Indeed. Who's then? I must know the supplier. I simply must. Please.
Well, I get the 24 from a salesman in Leadenhall Market. You want in the house, beer?
One house.
Muffle your gob, Ted. Oh. So, the house beer?
Your best, please, yes. And, by the way, I know some of them. Which was it?
Sorry?
Which was it?
Which was what?
What was the name of the salesman? I am well regarded by many of the salesmen.
You're a bit of a wagon chin, ain't you?
You haven't the slightest.
He knows.
He's information vegetable, animal, and mineral.
Knows the kings of England and quotes the fights historical.
So,
from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical.
So,
very well acquainted too with matters mathematical. He understands equations both as simple and quadratic.
Yes, I do. So amusing. And, you know, I was discussing binomial theorems with a salesman of Leadenhall the other day.
Do tell.
Go on.
Well, it was a side splitter. My mercantile friend insisted that the binomial coefficients appear in the golden triangle, when, of course, it is Pascal's.
Everybody knows that.
Indeed. Such was my joke to the fellow. So what was the salesman's name?
How should I know?
You purchased your geese from the man.
Oh, him! Brecken. Brecken something. Anything else?
Ah, I don't know him. Well, here's to your good health, barman, and prosperity to your house. Good night.
You gonna pay for that? Aye.
My apologies, sir. He can be a bit single-minded. This ought to cover it. Happy Christmas.
Ooh, happy Christmas.
I am a very of a mutton major general.
Shut it.
Holmes, slow down. Holmes, slow down.
Not a chance, Doctor. The game is too good. We are several points ahead, I think. Let us find Mr. Brecken something.
You are not fit for the city air. There must be a million coal fires burning tonight. Back to Baker Street with you. The treasure has been found already. The reward will come to you whether or not...
I am not after reward, Watson. Nor do I seek to ingratiate the Countess of Morcar. I am after the truth.
You cannot help but hurtle after the truth, Holmes. You have an unhealthy obsession with it.
If I am pathologically obsessed, Doctor, and the innocent benefit from it, so be it.
Holmes, slow down. I pursued my friend across Holborn, down Endell Street, through a zigzag of slums to Leadenhall Market. One of the largest stalls bore the name Breckenridge upon it, and the proprietor, a bald gentleman, as muscular as a horse, with trim orange side whiskers, was helping a boy put up the shutters. The pink broadsheet of weekly football scores stuck out of his pocket. Holmes rushed in.
Good evening, Mr. Breckenridge. It is a cold night.
The salesman nodded and gave my companion a buckshot glance. Holmes pointed at the bare slabs of marble.
Sold out, I see.
Let you have 500 dead birds tomorrow morning.
That's no good.
No. Well, if you look left and right, you'll see there are some in the market with the gas still flaring.
Ah, but I was recommended especially to you.
Really? Who by?
By the landlord of the Alpha.
Ah, sure. I chucked him a couple of dozen.
Fine specimens they were, too. Now, where did you get them from?
Don't now me, mister. What are you driving at? Let's have it straight.
I am
now.
Being as straight as bamboo, sir. I should like to know who sold you the geese which you supplied to the Alpha.
Well, then, I shan't tell you. So now...
Oh, it is a matter of no importance, but I don't know why you should be so warm over such a trifle.
Warm? You'd be boiling, maybe, if you were as pestered as I am. When I pay good coin for a good article, there should be an end of the business. But it's where are the geese? And who did you sell the geese to? And what will you take for those geese? One would think they were the only geese in Her Majesty's realm to hear about it.
Well, I have no connection with any of the others who have been making enquiries. If you won't tell us, the bet is off, that is all. But I'm always ready to back my opinion on the matter of wing and feather, and I have a fiver on it that the bird I ate is country bred.
Well, then you've pissed away your fiver because it's town bred.
Poppycock!
Bred between the bricks.
My palate begs to differ, Mr. Breckenridge.
Then your palate's got bollocks for brains. It's town bred.
It was nothing of the kind.
I say it was.
I don't believe it.
Do you think you know more about fowls than I, who've handled them ever since I was a nipper? Strangled them, slashed them, slung them every day? I tell you, those honkers that went to the Alpha were town bred.
You'll never persuade me to believe that bunk.
Will you bet, then?
Holmes,
It's merely taking your money, for I know that I am right. But if you wish me to cut your purse strings, I'll bet you a sovereign. Just to teach you not to be obstinate.
Excuse me, what my friend is...
Bring me the books, Bill!
The small boy brought round a skinny red volume and a great greasy black one, laying them out together beneath the hanging lamp.
Shouldn't have bet against Mr. Breckenridge, mister. Knows his birds better than his wife.
Watch it, Bill. Now then, Mr. Cocksure, you see this little book?
Yes. Well?
That's the list of folk from whom I buy, do you see? I'll explain in case it's too complicated. Here on this page are the country folk in blue ink, and the numbers after their names point to their accounts in the big black ledger. Now then, you see this other page in red ink? Well, that is a list of my town suppliers. Country folk are kind to you. Country folk you ride in blue. Towny folk you wish were dead. Towny folk you ride in red. Now, look at that third name. Third from the top. 1, 2, 3. Big block letters in red ink. Just read it out to me.
Mrs. Oakshot, 117 Brixton Road, 249.
Quite so. Now confer with the ledger.
Holmes conferred with the ledger.
Here you are, Mrs. Oakshot, 117, Brixton Road, egg and poultry supplier.
Now then, what's the last entry?
22 December, 24 geese at 7 shillings, 6 pennies.
Quite so, there you are. And underneath?
Sold to Mr. Windigate of the Alpha at 12 shillings. It's a tidy profit.
Don't be minding my profit. Just answer me this. Is Brixton Road in the country or in town?
Sections of it certainly have a rustic feel.
In the country or in town?
Sherlock Holmes looked deeply chagrined. He drew a sovereign from his pocket and plinked it down upon the slab.
Town bred! Ha! Now bugger off, you lace curtain crotchwit.
Breckenridge wadded up the broadsheet of football scores still in his pocket and tossed it at my friend's head. Slowly, my friend turned away with the air of a nobleman whose disgust is too deep for the English tongue. I followed. Several yards off, he stopped in the shadows beyond a lamppost and faced me with a smirk. The well-born chagrin faded wholly into a puckish victory.
Too easy, Watson. When you see a man with whiskers of that cut and a pink and protruding from his pocket, you can always draw him in by a bet. I dare say if I had flung £100 down in front of him, that man would not have given me such generous information.
His remarks were suddenly cut short by a loud hubbub which broke out from the stall we had just left. Whirling round, we saw a little rat-faced fellow standing in the circle of yellow light thrown by the swinging lamp, while Breckenridge, framed in the door of his stall, shook a fist at the cringing figure.
I've had it up to here with you and your missing geese. I wish you were all in the lake of fire. You come pestering me anymore, and Bill and I will bake you into a meat pie and feed you to a mad dog. You bring Mrs. Oakshot, and I'll answer her. Did I buy the geese off you?
No, but one of them was mine all the same.
Well, then, ask Mrs. Oakshot for
it. She told me to ask you.
You can ask the King of Prussia's concubine for all I care. I've had enough of it. Get out!
Oh. He charged fiercely forward, and the inquirer flitted away into the darkness.
Ha! This may save us a visit to Brixton Road. Come with me, and we shall see what is to be made of this fellow.
Striding through the scattered knots of people who lounged round the flaring stalls, my companion speedily overtook the little man and tapped him upon the shoulder. He sprang round, and I could see in the gaslight that every vestige of color had been driven from his bony face.
Who are you, then? What do you want?
You will excuse me, but I could not help overhearing the questions which you put to the salesman just now. I think I could be of assistance.
You? Who are you? How could you know anything of the matter?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. It is my business to know what other people don't know.
But you can know nothing of this.
I know everything of it. You are endeavoring to trace some geese, which were sold by Mrs. Oakshott of Brixton Road to a salesman named Breckenridge, by him in turn to Mr. Windigat of the Alpha, and by him to his club, of which Mr. Henry Baker is a member.
Oh, sir, you are the very man whom I have longed to meet. I can hardly explain to you how invested I am in this matter.
Sherlock Holmes hailed a four-wheeler which was passing.
In that case, we had better discuss it in a cozy room rather than this windswept marketplace. But pray tell me, before we go further, who is it that I have the pleasure of assisting?
The man hesitated for an instant. He gave a sidelong glance.
My name is John Robinson.
No, the real name. It is always awkward doing business with an alias.
A flush sprang to the white cheeks of the stranger.
Well, then, my real name is James Ryder.
Precisely so, head attendant of the Hotel Claridge. Huh? Pray step into this cab, and I shall soon be able to tell you everything which you would wish to know.
The wiry man stood glancing from one to the other of us with half-frightened, half-glistering eyes, as one who is not sure whether he is on the verge of a windfall or a catastrophe. He stepped into the cab.
You're listening to Plan B Theatre Company's Radio Hour, Episode 7, an adaptation of a story by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle. The story continues after a break. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And now the conclusion of our holiday radio drama, Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle.
Within 30 minutes, we were back in the Baker Street sitting room. Nothing had been said during our drive, but the high, thin breathing of our new companion betrayed the tempest of nerves whirling inside him.
Here we are. The fire looks so inviting in this weather. You look cold, Mr. Ryder. Pray take the basket chair.
Jittering like a cornered lab animal, Ryder sat with a forced grace, clasping and unclasping his fingers.
So, you want to know what became of those geese?
Yes, sir.
Or rather, I fancy, of that goose. It was one bird, in which you were interested. White, with a black bar across the tail.
Ryder quivered with anticipation.
Oh, sir, can you tell me where it went to?
Yes, and a most remarkable bird it proved. I don't wonder you should take an interest in it. It laid an egg after it was dead. The bonniest, brightest little blue egg that ever was seen. I have it here in my cabinet.
Our visitor all but twitched onto his feet. He clutched the mantelpiece with a ghostly hand. Holmes unlocked his strong box and held up the blue carbuncle. It shone like a star, the cold, brilliant, many-pointed radiance of midnight dancing on the walls. Ryder stood glaring with a bloodless face, uncertain whether to claim or disown it.
The game's up, Ryder.
Oh, King of the Jews!
Hold up, man! You'll trip into the fire! Give an arm, Watson! He's not got spit enough to go in for felony with impunity. Pour him a dash of brandy!
For a moment, the man swayed, nearly fell. But the brandy brought a dollop of color into his cheeks. He sat, his verminous eyes flitting at his accuser.
I have almost every link in my hands and all the necessary proofs, so there is little for you to tell me. Still, that little may as well be cleared up for the victim's safety. You had heard, Ryder, of this blue stone of the Countess of Morcar's?
Yes, sir. It was Catherine Cusick who told me of it.
I see. Her ladyship's waiting maid.
Holmes glanced across at me with a bitter knowing.
Well, the temptation of sudden wealth so easily acquired was too much for you, Ryder, as it has been for better men before you. But you are not very scrupulous in the means you used. It seems to me, Ryder, there is the making of a very pretty villain in you. You knew that this man Horner, the plumber, had been concerned in some such matter before, and that suspicion would rest the more readily upon him.
Yes?
So you made some small job in my lady's room, you and your confederate, and you managed that he should be the one sent for.
Well, yes.
Then, when he had left, you rifled the jewel case, raised the alarm, and had this unfortunate man arrested. You then went out...
For God's sake, have mercy!
Ryder plunged himself upon the rug, clutching at my companion's knees.
Think of my parents. Think of my sweet little sister. It would tear at their hearts, sir. I never went wrong before. A shadow, a sort of gray... shadow crept, leapt into my conscience.
Breathe, man.
But never again. I will never again.
Stop your whinging.
Breathe, damn it.
Swear it. I'll swear it on a King James Bible. Do you have a Bible?
Do not insult me.
No, please, don't drag me into court. My parents, oh, the papers, in the name of the Savior, don't.
Scurry back into your chair. It is very well to mule and cringe now, but you thought little enough of this poor Horner in the dock for a crime of which he knew nothing.
I will fly, Mr. Holmes. I will leave the country, sir, the whole empire. I'll live on an island, one that's very thorny. The charges against him will break down.
We will talk about that when you have given us a true account. Sit down! How came the stone into the goose? How came the goose into the open market? Tell us the truth, for there lies your only hope of protection.
Ryder sat, licking at the mucus on his spotted upper lip.
I will tell you all of it, just as it happened, sir, as I remember it. When Horner was arrested, it seemed... Could I please have a smidge more of that spirit?
Watson, if you please. Thank you, Watson. Carry on, Mr. Ryder.
Right. Well, so when Horner had been nicked, it seemed best for me to get away with the stone at once, for I didn't know when the police might take it into their heads to pat me down. There was no place at the hotel where it would be safe, so I went out as if on some commission, and I made for my sister's house. All the way there, every man I met seemed to be a detective. And though it was a cold night, the sweat was pouring down my face before I came to Brixton Road. So my sister asks me, "What is the matter? Why are you so pale?" Well, I tell her that I was upset by the jewel robbery. And then I went into the backyard, smoked a pipe, and wondered what it would be best to do. Well, I had a bad friend once called Maudsley, who served a year in the Pentonville dock. One day he had met me in a pub, and we fell into a chit-chat about the ways of thieves and how they could dispose of... Well, I knew that he would be true to me.
Any old thing you need, Jem.
So I made up my mind to run right on to Kilburn, where he lived, take him into my confidence. But then I thought of the agonies I'd gone through in coming from the hotel. I might at any moment be seized, right? And there would be the stone in my waistcoat.
And then you thought of the geese.
Yes, sir. I was leaning against the wall and looking at the geese waddling around my feet, and suddenly an idea flapped into my head, which showed me how I could beat the best detective that ever lived. My sister had told me some weeks before that I might have the pick of her geese for a Christmas present. So I would take my goose now, and in the goose I would smuggle my stone to Kilburn. There was a little shed in the yard, and I drove one of the birds behind it. A fine big one, white with a barred tail. I caught it, and... and it looked so innocent, like a fat little angel in a painting, except, you know, with a longer neck. And then, prizing its bill open, I thrust the stone into its mouth as far as my middle fingers could reach.
The little angel gave a gulp, and I felt the stone pass along its throat and down into its gizzard as it flapped and squabbled. And then out comes my sister to know what is the matter.
What were you doing to that bird, Jem?
Says she. And as I turn, the cherub breaks loose and flutters off. Well, I say, well, you said you'd give me one for Christmas. I was palpating which one was the fattest.
Oh, we've set yours aside for you. Jem's bird, we call it. It's the big white one over yonder.
Oh, thank you, Maggie, says I. But if it's all the same to you, I'd rather have the one I was handling just now.
The other is a good three pound heavier,
says she. Why, thank you, Maggie, says I. But if it's all the same to you, I'd rather have the one I was palpating.
And we fattened it expressly for you.
I say, never mind. I'll have the other. I'll take it now.
Oh, just as you like,
says she, a little huffed.
Which is it you wanted, then?
That white one with the barred tail, right in the middle of the flock, I say.
Kill it and take it with you.
And Mr. Holmes, I do what she says. I tell him, I'm sorry, and I club him. And then I lug the bird all the way to Kilburn, and I tell my pal Maudsley what I had done, and he... Well, he laughed a little. And then we got a knife and split open the goose, and my heart turned to water. For there was no sign of the stone. And I knew some diabolical or perhaps deific mistake had happened. I left the bird, sprinted back to my sister's, and hurried into the backyard. But there was not a bird to be seen there. Where are they all, Maggie? I cried.
Gone to the dealers, Jem.
Which dealers?
Breckenridge of Leadenhall.
Why? Was there another with a barred tail, I ask, same as the one I chose?
Yes, Jem. There were two barred-tailed ones. What's gotten up your crack?
So I ran, as hard as my feet would bring me, to this man Breckenridge. But he had sold the lot, and not one word would he tell me as to where they'd gone. You heard the bugger yourselves. My sister thinks that I am going mad. Sometimes I think I am myself. Oh, these have been the worst, awful 5 days of my life. And now, I am myself branded a very pretty villain without ever having touched the wealth for which I sold my Christian character. Oh, God, help me. Oh, God, Jesus, Mary, help me.
The man burst into convulsive sobbing, his face buried in the crooks of his elbows. There was a long silence, broken only by his heavy, rapt breathing and the measured tapping of Sherlock Holmes' fingertips upon the edge of the table.
Mr. Ryder, you are a fool wrapped in a twit inside of an imbecile.
My friend rose and threw open the door.
Get out!
What, sir? Oh, heaven bless you!
No more idiot words. Get out. Out. Need I smack you again?
Oh, thank you.
Out.
Thank you.
Out.
Thank
you. Out.
And no more was needed. With a rush, a clatter on the stairs, the bang of a door, and a crisp rattle of running footfalls from the street, Mr. Ryder was pardoned. I arched a single brow at Holmes, and he regarded me with a shrug, reaching out a hand for his clay pipe.
After all, Watson, I am not retained by the police to supply their deficiencies. If the plumber Horner were in danger, it would be another thing, but this fellow will not appear against him, and the case must collapse. I suppose that I am committing a felony, but it is just possible that I am saving a soul.
To my astonishment, my friend's eyes began to glim. Are you becoming emotional, Holmes?
I am sleep-deprived and underfed. Do not visit your judgment upon me. Visit me with fruitcake. I tell you, that fellow will not go wrong again. He is too stupidly frightened and too frightfully stupid. Send him to jail now, and you just make a jailbird for life. Besides, it is the season of forgiveness. Chance has put in our way a most whimsical problem, and its solution is reward enough.
Oh, my, the time.
I suppose you ought to be returning to Mary.
I really ought to be, yes.
Well, make haste, then. Give her my regards. Happy Christmas, etc.
I will. I collected my coat and hat, ambivalent as to whether I should voice again my concerns. I stood a quarter beat in the door. Holmes?
Yes, Watson?
And then I saw my friend so clearly, or as my friend would say, I observed him so clearly. He would never change, and perhaps he never should.
What is it, Watson?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It's just that... Happy Christmas, Holmes.
Oh, rubbish. Happy Christmas. Oh, I'm bored already, Watson. Run out and commit a baffling crime, will you?
Ugh.
Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle is written and adapted by Matthew Ivan Up on the Housetop Bennett, directed by Cheryl Ann Peppermint Twist Clough. Our cast included Bill Fruitcake Allred as Dr. Watson, Jason Figgy Pudding Tatum, and Jay Parumpa-Pum-Pum Perry as everyone else. Our digital and Foley effects were created and performed by Mark There Arose Such a Clatter Robinette and his brother. Other effects performed by Michael Sugarplum Fairy Johnson. Jennifer Cindy Lou Who Freed is the station manager. The house audio was mixed by Eric Do You Hear What I Hear Robinette. The lighting was designed by Jesse A Star Portillo. Plan B's producing director, Jerry Down the Chimney Rapier. Our thanks to the Salt Lake County Center for the Arts, Jeff Under the Mistletoe Gwillem, and Stephanie Holly Slade. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to all the Lords a-leapin' at the station, Technical Director Mike Anderson, Operations Manager Michael Havey, and our engineer Lewis Downey. Radio West is produced by the two Turtle Doves, Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. Sherlock Holmes was played by me. I'm Doug Fabrizio. I guess the partridge in a pear tree. Good night.